20. As Horace was leaving the station at Jefferson, a townward-bound car slowed beside him. It was the taxi which he used to go out to his sister's. "I'll give you a ride this time," the driver said. "Much obliged," Horace said. He got in. When the car entered the square, the courthouse clock said only 8:20, yet there was no light in the hotel room window. "Maybe the child's asleep," Horace said. He said, "If you'll just drop me at the hotel." Then he found that the driver was watching him with a kind of discreet curiosity. "You've been out of town today?" the driver said. "Yes," Horace said. "What is it? What happened here today?"
"She ain't staying at the hotel anymore. I heard Mrs. Walker taking her in at the jail."
"Oh," Horace said. "I'll get out of the hotel." The lobby was empty. After a moment, the proprietor appeared, a tight, iron-gray man with a toothpick, his vest open upon a neat paunch. The woman was not there.
"It's these church ladies," he said.
He lowered his voice, the toothpick in his fingers.
"They come in this morning, a committee of them. You know how it is, I reckon."
"You mean to say you let the Baptist Church dictate who your guests shall be?"
"It's them ladies. You know how it is once they get set on a thing. A man might just as well give up and do like they say. Of course, with me,
by God, if there was a man..."
"Shh," the proprietor said. "You know how it is when them..."
"But of course there wasn't a man who would. And you call yourself one that'll let..."
"I got a certain position to keep up myself," the proprietor said in a placative tone, "if you come right down to it."
He stepped back a little against the desk.
"I reckon I can say who'll stay in my house and who won't," he said. "And I know some more folks around here that better do the same thing. Not no mile off, neither. I ain't beholden to no man. Not to you, no ways."
"Where is she now? Or did they drive her out of town?"
"That ain't my affair, where folks go after they check out," the proprietor said, turning his back.
He said, "I reckon somebody took her in, though." "Yes," Horace said. "Christians, Christians." He turned toward the door. The proprietor called him. He turned. The other was taking a paper down from a pigeonhole. Horace returned to the desk. The paper lay on the desk. The proprietor leaned with his hands on the desk, the toothpick tilted in his mouth.
"She said you'd pay it," he said.
He paid the bill, counting the money down with shaking hands. He entered the jail yard and went to the door and knocked. After a while, a lank, slattern woman came with a lamp, holding a man's coat across her breast. She peered at him and said, before he could speak,
"You're looking for Miss Goodwin, I reckon."
"Yes. How did..."
"Did..." "You're the lawyer. I've seen you before."
"She's here, sleeping now." "Thanks," Horace said. "Thanks. I knew that someone..." "I didn't believe that..."
"I reckon I can always find a bed for a woman and child," the woman said. "I don't care what Ed says.
Was you wanting her special?"
"She's sleeping now."
"No, no, I just wanted to..." The woman watched him across the lamp.
"'Tain't no need bothering her, then. You can come around in the morning and get her a boarding place. 'Tain't no hurry."
On the next afternoon, Horace went out to his sister's, again in a hired car. He told her what had happened. "I'll have to take her home now." "Not into my house," Narcissa said. He looked at her. Then he began to fill his pipe slowly and carefully. "It's not a matter of choice, my dear. You must see that."
"Not in my house," Narcissa said.
"I thought we settled that."
He struck the match and lit the pipe. and put the match carefully into the fireplace. Do you realize that she has been practically turned into the streets? That shouldn't be a hardship. She ought to be used to that. He looked at her. He put the pipe in his mouth and smoked it to a careful coal, watching his hand tremble upon the stem. Listen, by tomorrow they will probably ask her to leave town, just because she happens not to be married to the man whose child she carries about these sanctified streets. But who told them? That's what I want to know. I know that nobody in Jefferson knew it, except...
You were the first I heard tell it,
Miss Jenny said.
But Narcissa...
Why, not in my house, Narcissa said. Well, Horace said. He drew the pipe to an even coal. That settles it, of course, he said in a dry, light voice. She rose.
Will you stay here tonight?
What? No. I told her I'd come for her at the jail, and he sucked at his pipe. Well, I don't suppose it matters. I hope it doesn't. She was still paused, turning.
Will you stay or not?
I could even tell her I had a puncture, Horace said. Time's not such a bad thing, after all. Use it right, and you can stretch anything out like a rubber band until it busts somewhere, and there you are, with all tragedy and despair and two little knots between thumb and finger of each hand.
Will you stay or won't you stay, Horace?
Narcissa said. I think I'll stay, Horace said. He was in bed. He had been lying in the dark for about an hour when the door of the room opened, felt rather than seen or heard. It was his sister. He rose to his elbow. She took shape vaguely, approaching the bed. She came and looked down at him.
How much longer are you going to keep this up? She said.
Just until morning, he said. I'm going back to town. You need not see me again. She stood beside the bed, motionless. After a moment, her cold, unbending voice came down to him. You know what I mean. I promise not to bring her into your house again. You can send Isom in to hide in the canterbed. She said nothing. Surely you don't object to my living there, do you?
I don't care where you live. The question is where I live. I live here, in this town. I'll have to stay here.
But you're a man. It doesn't matter to you. You can go away.
Oh, he said.
He lay quite still. She stood above him, motionless. They spoke quietly, as though they were discussing wallpaper, food.
Don't you see? This is my home, where I must spend the rest of my life, where I was born. I don't care where else you go, nor what you do. I don't care how many women you have, nor who they are. But I cannot have my brother mixed up with a woman people are talking about. I don't expect you to have consideration for me. I ask you to have consideration for our father and mother. Take her to Memphis. They say you refuse to let the man have bond to get out of jail. Take her on to Memphis. You can think of a lie to tell him about that, too.
Oh, so you think that, do you?
I don't think anything about it. I don't care. That's what people in town think. So it doesn't matter whether it's true or not. What I do mind is every day you force me to have to tell lies for you. Go away from here, Horace. Anybody but you would realize it's a case of cold-blooded murder.
And over her, of course. I suppose they say that, too, out of their odorous and omnipotent sanctity.
Do they say yet that it was I killed him?
I don't see that it makes any difference who did it.
The question is, are you going to stay mixed up with it? When people already believe you and she are slipping into my house at night.
A cold, unbending voice shaped the words in the darkness above him. Through the window, upon the blowing darkness, came the drowsy dissonance of cicada and cricket.
"Do you believe that?" he said. "It doesn't matter what I believe. Go on away, Horace. I ask it. And leave her, them, flat.
Hire a lawyer if he still insists he's innocent. I'll pay for it. You can get a better criminal lawyer than you are. She won't know it. She won't even care. Can't you see that she is just leading you on to get him out of jail for nothing? Don't you know that woman has got money hidden away somewhere? You're going back into town tomorrow, are you?"
She turned, began to dissolve into the blackness. "You won't leave before breakfast." The next morning at breakfast, his sister said, "Who will be the lawyer on the other side of the case?"
"District attorney."
"Why?" She rang the bell and sent for fresh bread. Horace watched her. "Why do you ask that?"
Then he said, "Damn little squirt."
He was talking about the district attorney, who had also been raised in Jefferson and who had gone to the town school with them. "I believe he was at the bottom of that business night before last. The hotel. Getting her turned out of the hotel for public effect. Political capital.
By God, if I knew that, believed that he had done that just to get elected to Congress."
After Horace left, Narcissa went up to Miss Jenny's room.
"Who is the district attorney?" she said.
"You've known him all your life," Miss Jenny said. "You even elected him. Eustace Graham.
What do you want to know for?
Are you looking around for a substitute for Gowan Stevens?"
"I just wondered," Narcissa said.
"Fiddlesticks," Miss Jenny said. "You don't wonder. You just do things and then stop until the next time to do something comes around."
Horace met Snopes emerging from the barbershop, his jowls gray with powder, moving in an effluvium of pomade. In the bosom of his shirt, beneath his bow tie, he wore an imitation ruby stud which matched his ring. The tie was of blue polka dots. The very white spots on it appeared dirty when seen close. The whole man, with his shaved neck and pressed clothes and gleaming shoes, emanated somehow the idea that he had been dry-cleaned rather than washed.
"Well, Judge," he said, "I hear you're having some trouble getting a boarding place for that client of yourn. Like I always say,"
he leaned, his voice lowered, his mud-colored eyes roving aside,
"the church ain't got no place in politics, and women ain't got no place in neither one, let alone law. Let them stay at home, and they'll find plenty to do without upsetting a man's lawsuit. And besides, a man ain't no more than human, and what he does ain't nobody's business but his. What you done with her?"
"She's at the jail," Horace said. He spoke shortly, making to pass on. The other blocked his way with an effect of clumsy accident.
"You got them all stirred up, anyhow. Folks are saying you wouldn't get Goodwin no bond, so he'd have to stay."
Again, Horace made to pass on.
"Half the trouble in this world is caused by women, I always say. Like that girl getting her paw all stirred up, running off like she done.
I reckon he done the right thing, sending her clean out in the state."
"Yes," Horace said in a dry, furious voice.
"I'm mighty glad to hear your case is going all right. Between you and me, I'd like to see a good lawyer make a monkey out in that district attorney. Give a fella like that a little county office, and he gets too big for his pants right away. Well, glad to have saw you. I got some business uptown for a day or two. I don't reckon you'll be going up that way."
"What?" Horace said. "Up where?"
"Memphis. Anything I can do for you?
No, Horace said. He went on. For a short distance, he could not see at all. He tramped steadily, the muscles beside his jaws beginning to ache, passing people who spoke to him unawares.